Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. Happy New Year. Glad to be back with you. Big news in cybersecurity this week. Spotify, 300 terabytes of all the best and worst music, I guess, leaked, among other things going on in the world of data breach and overreach. So all that and much more on this episode coming right up.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Len, good to be back with you, buddy. Long time no see. Did the last one solo. How the heck are things in your neck of the woods? Happy New Year, I guess, even though we've seen each other for the other show since then. But Happy New Year anyway. Just for this audience, pretend that we haven't talked to each other.
Oh, it's been a great 2026 so far. Did you reach your stacking goal in Bitcoin yet?
I haven't. I plan to, though, this year. I mean, I always plan to. I think we all should. Have you? Have you even set the goal? I mean, it's so early. Oh, yeah. How do you? Yeah, have you?
0.1. Okay. Yeah. 0.1. Yeah.
Retirement number, magic retirement.
Yeah.
Number.
And it's a great year. I haven't been hacked. All my data remains intact.
Nice.
It's day 8 of 2026. So it's a great year so far. I assume the same for you too, right?
So far, nothing stolen from me, which is nice. Let's get into it. So we got Spotify, Mongo Bleed, some data deletion stuff from California, Comifornia, among other stories. But first, as always, Len, this the quote of the week from last episode. Not last week, last episode. It was who seeks shall find. That was from Sophocles. No one got it. I'm imagining you guys were just on holidays. So this week, hopefully a better effort. The quote, real knowledge is to know the extent of one's ignorance. Great, great quote. If you know who it was by, put it in the comments. Don't forget, you can only look at the package for the cookies you've yet to eat for the answer. No Googling. And once you get the answer, put it in the comments section. Your next round of renewals, of course, on Mark and the team at EasyDNS. So Len, Spotify, tell me about it.
Poor team over there. You're a Spotify user?
I am slowly migrating to Apple Music, though, if for no other reason than because the quality of the audio is better. And I'm a big live DJ sets guy, working out, walking the dog. Spotify has none of that stuff. Very little live sets, I think is the sort of term you would use. Whereas Apple Music has tons. They actually, it looks to me, sponsor those sorts of things all over the world. So if you're looking for an exclusive kind of, you know, hour-long DJ set, chances are it's going to be there, which has me for now. Plus Spotify is raising the prices, I think. Did I read that right a little while ago? I might have read that right.
Beats me. I don't even know how that compares to Apple Music or whatever. So I have no clue. Either way, over there, it was a Christmas miracle over there because this Anna's Archives. And this is a shadow library collective. They've been saying that, well, they successfully scraped a lot of data from Spotify, the entire Spotify music catalog, 300 terabytes approximately of data. That's a heck of a lot of data. And of that, if they say they have captured 86 million audio files and 256 million rows of metadata. And they think this covers about 99.6% of all the listing activity in a platform, but maybe not. We'll see. They say the goal of this is for preservation archiving. That's why they want to do this. They say that this is information is now stored and it's being passed along to anybody that wants it through torrents out there. And that's the very popular decentralized sharing platform. And they say given the size of everything here, they're using a tiered quality system. So popular tracks out there, they are going to be kept in high quality format. And something that is not so popular is going to be re-encoded in a lower bit rate. So it may not sound as good. The whole purpose of this, they said, it's going to help with cultural preservation because they say that more obscure artists out there may be at risk to get deleted from history if these streaming platforms were ever shut down. And Spotify says they have identified the accounts that were responsible for the unlawful scraping of this data. And they also say that the breach didn't cover the entire platform's full catalog. So let's see what's going on. Either way, the torrent stuff is out there. If you want to get it, it's available, and potentially it may be individual tracks could be available in the not too distant future. And if that happens, then it becomes a situation, you know, back in the day when maybe not exactly like, but when Napster was out there and people were able to download information or songs, individual songs, and well, you know, it could be an industry, they're doing the copyright and they're trying to fight for that. And these guys are talking about digital preservation. It's going to be interesting to see how this thing works out, but that's 300 terabytes is a heck of a lot of data. On this decentralized platform, it's virtually impossible to stop. So anybody out there, if they want it, if they have the storage capacity, they can get everything that's been downloaded. Interesting.
300 terabytes is a lot. Couple things I would talk about here, want to talk about here. Some of them directly related, others not so much. How familiar are you with DRM?
Digital rights management. I kind of understand that on when for you download the game.
Exactly. It's an attempt to like stop piracy and stuff. It seems to me that if Spotify can get clipped by this, then anybody can. Spotify notoriously difficult to deal with on the file side. So much so that people complained for a long time about file quality, because the concern from Spotify was about piracy before it was about making sure that people had a quality bit of audio in their headphones. Even with those precautions, they still got clipped for 300 terabytes. Every single song on the platform, save for like some of the basically zero play songs people were just uploading for their own archiving as Anna's archive said. So the DRM problem, I think it's fair to say this is getting worse now. The restrictions are more severe and the safety seems to have evaporated. I pirate games, you know, those DRM systems do not work anymore. Amazing Len, you know, I remember when we were kids, when I was a kid anyway, you used to have to pirate games and download the crack, right? The cracked executable and stuff. Now you download a game from Torrents, from the Fit Girl website, it's called, and it's just a setup file. It does everything for you. It takes about an hour to install something like, I don't know, what's a good example? Cyberpunk, 2077, all the expansions, DRM is nuked. There's nothing they can do. And no extra work for the user. Same thing here. We've talked oftentimes about this cat and mouse game that that large corporations are playing with white and black hat hackers. You can decide which hat Anna's Archive is wearing in this case. You know, we'll I guess all think about that one on our own time, but they've lost this fight and seem now to be at a crossroads. Getting rid of the user accounts and stuff is one thing, but this was done by agentic AI by the looks of things. So you have these automated tools taking care of this. It's very difficult to stop this. This does expose Spotify. Anyone who uses Spotify knows this to be a problem. The shuffle feature in Spotify is not authentic. It's very much curated. I have a list of EDM songs that's like 700 tracks long that I used to use all the time for working out, running, before playing football, whatever. And I just can't listen to the list anymore, because no matter how many times I try, no matter what song I start from, no matter what settings I try and tweak, it just gives me the same 10 songs. It's almost unbelievable to experience something like that from a service you pay for. You try and add something like, you know, dynamic shuffle, where Spotify also adds in songs for you to listen to that are not on the list based on your taste, but they're clearly not based on my taste. It's adding stuff from the last, you know, 6 months that people considered popular. That's not real shuffle. And I think a lot of Spotify users have that thought, and this sort of popularity structure for the songs, you know, talk about a long tail on either side. It does show that this is something that they might actually be participating in and doing actively to suppress or pump songs up. Last thing I'll mention, there's at least one conspiracy out there that a major AI player is looking for training data and was actually behind this hack and used Anna's Archive to launder it. So consider that a training need for one of these large LLMs arises and requires, or they want, you know, for convenience or just for quality of the model, all these Spotify songs. Well, how are you going to get them? You can't, unless you scrape the data. And certainly you can't be caught scraping the data, but the good people at Anna's Archive can. Anna's Archive has a reputation, by the way, for stealing all kinds of stuff. All the books my wife reads on her Kindle are jacked off Anna's Archive. I'm sure she's not the only one doing that. So this is a big story. It's a big story for the reasons I mentioned there. And then also you mentioned that the sort of parallels to the Napster thing from years ago, right? The war on quality is one that ebbs and flows. You may remember when Napster first came out, there was not really good ways to get songs from CDs to computers. In fact, ripping a CD in Windows Media Player became basically impossible by like 2003. You know, you couldn't rip the newest albums because the tracks would be jumbled in some cases. They just wouldn't go. The computer would tell you you couldn't read the disc, blah, blah, blah. There was a million things that these companies were doing, Universal Records explicitly or specifically was doing with their hardware to make sure that you couldn't get those songs onto albums. Napster showed up, and then it gave rise to the subscription model of iTunes and Spotify and torrents. And then, you know, once, or I should say iTunes, then torrents came into prominence. And then now back, I think, in a lot of ways to streaming, thanks to the advent of mobile and the sort of the prevalence of mobile listening. But this isn't over. I think piracy is going to make a comeback because no one wants to pay $20 a month to listen to music.
Bingo.
You know, that they can't control the shuffle on, for example. No one wants that. No one wants to pay $20 a month for music during which they have to listen to shitty advertising or some other kind of, you know, money-making mechanism that's sort of under the radar, under the surface of the product you think you're getting. Nobody wants that. Netflix is having the same problem. IPTV, a symptom of the same problem. Like, these are all things that are coming back on, you know, in vogue now, and they're coming back en masse. I expect this is going to continue too. Here's a question for you. How much longer until the old MP3 player makes a return to the everyday carry for the average millennial? It can't be more than a few years, right?
No,
I think it's close. I think it's really close because I think iPhones will have a way to tell whether or not the music you're listening to was paid for. And I think Android phones will do the same thing. It's going to be part of this ongoing war. I'm not saying necessarily they will win, but I think it's going to require another device. That's my guess.
I'm going to be amazed if somebody's going to be willing. I think people are not willing to pick up a second device on top of their phone. People have the phone and that's that. They don't want to add any more peripherals to that. They want to leave it at that. But this pendulum is swinging us back and forth. Do you remember when Napster came into existence? CDs at the time, you had to buy the whole album, $20 or whatever, $15 for the CD, and you wanted one or two songs, but you got those two songs plus a bunch of others you didn't want to hear, but you were forced to buy it. But with Napster, or something similar at the time, you could just download a single song, and you could do it easily. And you can see, you get rid of all the crappy songs you don't want to hear, and you just have the good songs you want to hear. Now, we thought with these a la carte processes that they provided us would be, people were cheering for this when it first came out. In the end, now they're nickel and diming people. Mm-hmm. And now they don't have the ability to pay for, I'm looking at the price of Spotify. I think this is in US, $19.99.
Crazy.
Yeah. That's for the premium family. Just for an individual, premium individual is $11.99. You know, that's 15 Canadian, give or take.
Yeah, we actually have the family plan here, and
that's 20 US. What is that? Yeah, like 27 Canadian.
Not to mention, like, there's other hardware issues that pop up when you're trying to use Spotify in your home. I mean, again, it's a product that has been made worse over the years as opposed to better, which seems to be the case for a lot of stuff, unfortunately. But to me, the piracy thing is going to make a comeback if it hasn't officially made it already, I think.
And you were saying there's ads. They're putting ads in this stuff too?
Well, they put ads, but they're not, they're like native ads, let's say. So for example, you know, when I go to, you know, it knows what genres of music I like. So every Friday I get a list called Release Radar. Release Radar has some stuff that I like, but it's also loaded with stuff that's like the record label's preferred, you know, next hype song from some artist that I don't like, don't know, but I'm supposed to care about because, you know, they're on the cover of some magazine at a checkout, Shoppers Drug Mart. You know what I'm saying? So maybe not, maybe advertising is the wrong word, but they're astroturfing, you know, the sort of popularity of some of their artists this way. I didn't get the app for that. You have enough data on me to know what I like. Just use it.
So you're paying for a service and now you're getting stuff that you don't want. I could understand if it was free and you're getting shoveled this down your throat, probably even a little bit more than that. I can understand that. Like, it's like you're watching YouTube, for instance, and every so often you have to watch an ad. That I get. But if you have to pay, and on top of that, you're still getting that type of stuff sent to you, like, come on.
It's actually crazy, too, because there's other services like SoundCloud, another, you know, sort of EDM-heavy platform. SoundCloud will give you 3 songs basically every day. Yeah, I think it's 3 every day or every 2 days in your whatever browse or for you section. I have not liked one of those songs in weeks. So it knows exactly what it's looking for me. And I'm Spotify has way more data on what I like to listen to, when I like to listen, all that stuff. And they just, you know, not to mention now they've also opened a chat app so you can PM people, DM people. So my buddies, you know, when I share music with them, it shares in a private chat now in the app. And so not only are they monitoring what you share, I'm sure, but they're also monitoring what you say about it. You know, like the data flow never ends. And what are they doing with it? Nothing. They're just complaining that other people are sick of their shit too. Sorry, I sweared twice on this program, but yeah.
And our archive got the metadata. I'm not sure what's included in that, but it's
everything. Everything. 300 terabytes. It's everything. They also noted they're going to release stuff like album art and lyrics at some point. Like they got everything.
I don't think it's sharing the discussions you're having with your friends, though. I think that's kind of excluded. But nonetheless, I got a crap load. Let's move on. That's a long time to talk about Spotify, a product I don't even use. Mongo Bleed, right?
Here we go. Let's go with something you do use. Mongo Bleed.
Oh, yeah. I use Mongo Bleed. It's the document-oriented database that's used for high-volume data storage. Well, looks like they had another Christmas miracle too, these guys, because during the time of celebration that people are relaxing and spending time with the family, a vulnerability was disclosed and it was called Mongo Bleed. Don't really like that name too much. Maybe I'll give it a 1.5 out of
2.5 for me. Yeah, it's not great.
Nothing too original. What this does, it allows for somebody to get unauthenticated access. So remote attackers could come in, could read what is called heap memory, that's the uninitialized heap memory, from a MongoDB server, and it's done by sending specific compressed network packets, and that allows them to, well, just about get in. And every version or nearly every version of MongoDB released in the past decade can be exploited. Even
is that a long time? Can we get a confirmation here? Is that a long time? How many versions is that, you think?
I didn't even check, but
gotta be a lot. Gotta be
well,
a
for
lot.
Sure. Yeah. Minor and major releases, but 10 years worth of updates is you could take advantage, and you could do this even before a user is able to log in. And so the attacker tricks the server into returning fragments of the system information, the system memory, and the stuff that could be included there is pretty nasty. If you guys, it could also include stuff like plain text database passwords, session tokens, AWS secret keys. So with stuff like this, especially the plain text database passwords, you could basically go to town.
Yeah.
And they say that an estimated 200,000 MongoDB instances were exposed to the internet, and users, they're strongly advised to do a few things. Patch your systems immediately, that's being one, or do some workarounds such as disabling the zlib compression and also restricting network access to trusted IPs. I don't know why you wouldn't want to just simply patch it. It seems like it's the most direct and safest approach from doing it, but I guess people don't want to go to the newest and latest greatest for some reason. All the more power to them. Either way, if you are a MongoDB user, be very careful, because if you don't do this kind of stuff, your information could be at risk, especially what is being resided on that computer and the heap memory. So good luck to you.
Right. So wiz.io has a good bit on this too. If you want to know just exactly how prevalent MongoDB and this particular flaw are in cloud environments, what percentage of cloud environments do you think use a vulnerable version of this this Mongo thing?
Is it more than 50%?
It's 42%.
Ooh, okay.
Big number, right? So We talk a lot on the show about how outsourcing does leave you vulnerable in some regard, and this is a good example of that. Not necessarily that these people are incompetent, but it was hiding in there for quite some time, and here we are now. What can you do to avoid this? The answer is not much, honestly.
Well, aside from patching your system,
yeah.
I mean, that's the way that you can mitigate.
another like little bit I got here is just I'll read right from the article. Fundamentally, this vulnerability exists because MongoDB instances are exposed to the internet without authentication barriers. As a best practice, MongoDB should never be directly internet facing. It should be behind firewalls, bastions, hosts, or VPNs. The fact that 213,000 instances are internet exposed suggests widespread architectural malpractice across organizations. Ding, ding, ding. So make of this what you will, man. Be smart. Scale properly, or you will eventually be the target of one of these attacks. No doubt about it. No doubt. You can actually probably say no doubt about it at this point, right? I think so.
California.
In the positive light here, I dare say.
Well, I can't believe this has to be legislated.
Blind squirrel theory, right?
Let's at least lay the table here. So January 2026, here we are. New privacy law came into effect in California, and it's up and running. And it's the aim of this is to provide end users, people living and doing business in California, is a way to deal with the holding on to tons of personal information. That's what companies out there, 500 registered brokers, they collect and sell user data. And this could include stuff like GPS, location history,
crazy,
social security numbers, and more. And this is done without the user's consent. They just get this information, they collect it, and they potentially sell it for profit without the end user knowing. So legislation came into effect. And it's something like a one-stop shop. It's a deletion mechanism, and it's all managed by the California Privacy Protection Agency. Prior to this, before this took in place, people had to get in contact to these individual companies, one by one, meticulously going to them and ask them to submit a request to like have this stuff deleted. Now you can just simply go one-stop shop and get it done. And brokers are required to do this, these requests, within every 45 days. So basically, as soon as they get the request, shortly thereafter, this information is then gone. So data brokers also must disclose details of the type of information they collect, including stuff that, like sensitive information like mobile advertising IDs and vehicle information, because vehicles these days, they're also a hotspot for getting information. They say that if you are non-compliant, you're going to be fined heavily. I can't believe that this stuff had to have been legislated, and that they were, up until this came into effect, information was being collected and sold without anybody's consent, and it's making people, they are the product. Whatever you do, whatever you say, how you act, how you run your life, that information can be used and sold as a way to try to target advertisers towards you, or maybe new products towards you. This is pathetic. I can't believe this is being done.
Do you know why? Why did they legislate this, you think? This is the question I have for you. What is the motive here?
That's a great question.
It's an obvious one, I think. Give it 5 seconds. Why would they legislate something like this in a state that almost never can get its act together on legislation that makes sense?
I'm just surprised. I don't know, because Silicon Valley is there.
They hate big tech. Exactly. And they think this is a way that big tech is mining people for profit. It is, in a way. But
they hate big tech?
Oh my God. Yeah. Big time. Are you kidding?
Because with Silicon Valley being there, it helps prop up.
They don't understand everything. Forget it. You can't explain that to Newsom and these guys. It's an impossible task. They're not friendly to entrepreneurs. They're not friendly to tech. They're not friendly to anybody, but this is good. This is good policy. I like it, especially because it's like the fee structure is $200 per day, and it provides people with an opportunity to start the process themselves, right? The violations are per request. So if someone asks if you've done this or not, it's audited, and then the fines start. Like, that's pretty good. It's very difficult to scale this without help from the same companies probably that you're going after, the big tech companies, but a story for another time. This is akin to the GDPR law in Europe, right? The right to be forgotten law in Europe. And because of states' rights, you basically have these like fragmentations all across the country in terms of like data collection, privacy laws, whatever. I mean, a million other things too, gun laws and everything. But this is good legislation, I think. And you're right. It shouldn't have to be put into law, right? It shouldn't have to be codified. Why are these guys collecting, storing, keeping, using, selling data? Register. Why are they allowed to be registered data brokers selling GPS data that we know, even though they say it's anonymized? What is the likelihood that it actually is? Of course.
100%
not. Everything's private till Anna's archive gets, you know, your name and number, and then what? You know, not that they would do that, but there's certain other elements out there that would. So I like it. Wow. I like it. Shout out to California, man. Credit where it's due. Blind squirrel finds a nut every so often. Even if that's the case, they got the nut now. So enjoy it.
Is Newsom on our Christmas card list?
He's running for president for sure. How many people are trying to start their presidential campaign on the back of the stuff in Minnesota, by the way? We don't have to talk about that, but the number is pretty large.
Is he still the front runner for the Democrats?
Gotta be. Who else is there? AOC?
I don't know. But yeah. Zoran, we're so early on into this that anybody could come around. Could Oprah still run? Could Michelle?
Oprah's 80. Isn't she like 80 years old?
Well, frig, we had the guy that's in power right now.
I know, but he's a young 80. He's a lot of things, but I think he's a young 80. Anyway, let's keep going. We're going to run long here because we talked about Spotify for half an hour.
Hey, did you see, by the way, they could just going into the weeds here.
Perfect.
The birth date, the birth year of the previous bunch of presidents is all 1946.
Yeah, 46. Except Obama.
Obama? Yeah. Going back to Clinton.
Yeah. You know, you can say what you want about the age of the presidents, but I'll tell you, is there any doubt that that demographic produced a harder man than someone born in the 70s and 80s? There's not, is there? I don't think there is.
Someone born in the 70s and 80s?
So like guys born in this, in the, you know, he's born in 46, right? Trump?
Yeah.
Like that guy is a different kind of man than a man born in the 70s.
Oh, you know? Got it. Okay, sorry. Yeah. I was going to say go back 30-something years, 40 years, and guys had it really rough.
For sure. But he's a different kind of man than the most recent guy. So people, I think the question being raised by that stat is why do we keep electing old presidents? Well, the reason is because the new ones aren't cut out for it. The younger people aren't cut out for it.
Gavin Newsom comes around and bucks the trend.
Yeah, slimy Gavin. Can't wait. That scumball. Let's go to Apple and Google.
Apple, yeah. So this security reporter was showing off what happens when individuals receive notifications from like the Apples and the Googles of the world informing them that they've been targeted by those state-sponsored spywares. And he writes about this guy, Jay Gibson, who got a notification on his iPhone that read, "Apple detected a targeted mercenary spyware attack against your iPhone." And this is becoming increasingly a problem with the Pegasus and stuff like that, these mercenary surveillance tools that are just available for people, governments, to use against people out there. And anybody does get this message because it could happen, you know, most likely to people that are important figures. But if you get a sort of message like this, you got to verify it because it could be fake, right? You got to verify this thing is legit or not. And if it's true, and you know, you got to right away, the first thing you have to do is isolate. This is one of the most important things, is isolate your phone. Put it in a Faraday bag, turn it off. I would say just leave it in a Faraday bag.
Hit it with a hammer, whatever.
No, I you got to, you know, separate it from getting any data from the mothership.
Yeah.
And because they're taking advantage of those zero-day attacks, and those spyware, they could do lots of damage. They could get lots of information from you. But beyond this, I could simply just be isolating. It also talks about this article, some guidance about getting professional help. And so people like journalists, activists, government officials, and they get impacted by this. They could approach the Amnesty International Security Lab or the Access Now Digital Security Helpline. And they could help do some forensic analysis. They could determine if the phone itself has been breached, and they could help try to mitigate the problem, to try to clean the device, and also securing the cloud accounts and any sensitive communications. But beyond that, you also have the toll, the psychological toll that's impacted here, because somebody thinks that they, or know that they've been attacked like this, there's going to be some long-standing problems with that individual. Because once they're targeted, right, you could just assume that your email addresses, your telephone numbers, well, your enemies now have that information. And so what's going to happen in the future? You're probably going to be targeted again. Why are you being targeted? You're probably looking in a mirror, your friends, family, and maybe they could be at risk as well. So the psychological toll this could take on an individual is you can't really measure it. And for iPhones, they say another thing, you could use also the lockdown mode, and you could also use hardware security keys like the YubiKeys. These are also ways to help provide extra layers of security when you use these devices. I don't think somebody like you or I are ever going to be in this type of situation. But the reality is people that are writing articles, they're bringing stuff with government to light. And, you know, I can't believe these tools are available, but just available only to governments to be used, right? It's basically prime making it so that they're able to use these tools and individually select who it is they want to target and make their life a living hell.
Yeah.
That's what it really does. That's what this kind of stuff does. It's pathetic.
The list of numbers, the leaked Pegasus client list, guess how many numbers?
Not even a clue.
50,000. So they got a lot of people on the list of, you know, targets in this regard. It's interesting, you know, the Apple and Google both have a version of lockdown mode. I think Google's is like advanced device protection or something like that. It makes the recommendation, but then neither company, it'd be harder for Google to do it, easier for Apple to do it. Neither company actually offers any forensic support. It just tells you to put it in lockdown mode. And then you have to either go to a government agency. There's risks there, obviously. Something like Amnesty International will help you, or you can do these private firms. So there's like four or five here I have listed: iVerify, Lookout, Hexordia, Safety Sync Group. If you don't know, like, here's the problem, right? You are really on your own once you become enough of a target that some intelligence agency is trying to get at your data. Do you really feel safe going to a private firm or even to an Amnesty International or even to a consulate if you're abroad? You would feel like you were alone, and you would be. You would be alone because everyone you talk to would know why you're being targeted, but they wouldn't tell you, right? Is that fair to say? It feels like that's how it would be, especially if you were in the intelligence, you know, or intelligence adjacent communities.
But you know what I mean? You're still going to be going out there and requesting some help. You're not going to be stuck in
you'd have to request the help. It's just, you know, the question is like how much, you know, you're not going to gain any sleep back, I don't think. That's how I would think about it anyway.
There'd be maybe a little bit more peace of mind if you reach out, and you may not get any help, but at least you feel a little bit better. Just the fact that you've been knowing you're trying something, doing nothing is not a position you want to be in.
At
least trying to be active, proactive with the situation, trying to improve it. Mm-hmm. Good luck if you're ever attacked.
Good luck. I'm renaming this podcast to Good Luck With That.
And the funny thing, if they come after me, I take pictures of nothing. Really,
it's on purpose.
You could go after my phone and be a joke. People would just laugh at what's on there.
Funny.
My Discord. Anyways, if you're using one of the old D-Link DSL gateway routers,
damn.
Yeah, it's time to upgrade. If you already haven't already, because there's been an exploit out there. There's a vulnerability allowing for somebody to do some critical remote code execution. And this is done by user-supplied parameters in the dnsconfig.cgi endpoint. And what this allows is for somebody to remotely run shell commands, essentially giving them full control over these old D-Link DSL devices. And it's these old devices include DSL-2640B, DSL-2740R. There's a few of them. But these are all end-of-life stuff that's going back as far as 2020. These are legacy products out there. I don't think people are using them. D-Link doesn't even intend to release a security patch to fix this stuff. They're just recommending people to retire this stuff, upgrade the hardware, and go from there. I don't know why anybody would want to use old equipment that's attached to the internet, just because of like security, not just that, but speed as well. And I, you know, if I used an old router, I would know right away that it would be slow. It wouldn't take advantage of the latest Wi-Fi capabilities.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be throttled somehow, and it would just be slow. So I'm just going to go out there and get a new one just because, well, because I want the latest and greatest in terms of speed. But anybody out there that's being cheap, you may want to be careful because maybe somebody's going to take advantage of you. Hopefully you don't have any secure information that you don't want to have in somebody else's hands. If so, you may want to upgrade.
What kind of company do you think keeps old hardware employed this long after end of life?
I wouldn't even guess. I doubt government would do that.
Government would not. Small businesses probably would, right?
Maybe.
It's sort of don't fix it if it ain't broke mentality. IT support is expensive. You know, you have a bunch of patchwork stuff. I've worked for businesses that have patchwork IT solutions that, well, not even anywhere close to ideal or streamlined, just work. And there's not enough redundancy to pull one thing out and risk everything else breaking to replace a piece of hardware that's past its life support date. So, you know, you're probably getting asymmetric risk here in businesses that really can't afford the downfalls of this vulnerability, which sucks. The other thing is that it's hard to detect. It looks like you can actually just block access to security websites, to other websites, and you know, unless you're doing packet inspection, there's really no way to detect it. So these same businesses that really, like a large organization will do this stuff by default, while a small business, an SME, for example, won't ever be doing packet inspection. They don't care about the speed of the Wi-Fi. They're not downloading movies or videos or streaming. They're doing debit or credit transactions or whatever, right? Email. The speed doesn't affect you, but you don't know that you've already been compromised by the time you find out. It's too bad.
And those packet inspections, you want to have it between the internet and the router? Not many people are going to be able to. So
Whatever. Good luck out there.
Hardware.
That's right. That's it for this week in the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And good to be back with you. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to tell a friend about the show. And of course, accessofeasy.com for the rest of the stories. Sign up for the newsletter and check us out on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, friends, take care.